Place to Be Nation, welcome to this special episode of the Place to Be podcast. And unfortunately, we come to you tonight with a somber mood and heavy hearts as we are here to eulogize one of the all-time wrestling greats, Macho Man Randy Savage. And joining me, as always, is my partner, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Mr. Azzaro. And as you said, usually we come here throwing our jabs and having some fun. But and hey, you know, we love talking about all of our childhood heroes and great superstars, but you know, usually we like to talk about them in a happy, celebratory mood. But unfortunately, tonight is not one of them. On Friday afternoon, actually, it's Friday morning, around 9:45. Actually, I have to be honest with you. The first person I heard this from was you. I had sent you a text. I sent you an email. I forgot what it was about. Probably something to do with one of our podcasts later this week, most likely.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And you just suddenly typed the next line. Savage just died in a car accident. And literally, I just stared at the screen. And I was all by myself in our area on the work floor. Matt Rotel, our correspondent, was actually up upstairs in one of our work areas. And I thought you were, I gotta be honest. I mean, I shouldn't say I thought you were fucking with me, because I know you don't have that kind of sense of humor. I thought maybe you would read it off something weird or some strange, you know, some weird link or something bizarre. And in all reality, you sent me the link and we went to TMZ, and there it was. And I was on the Lords of Pain front page and our board. I had like two or three windows open, and I go to Lords of Pain and there was nothing about it. And the minute you sent me the email, I refreshed my page, and sure enough, the headline had popped right there.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the sites that I kept checking after I first found out didn't have it. Yeah. Right away, because I was warming up my lunch and I was like kind of playing, flipping through Twitter while I was waiting for the microwave. And I didn't see anything, so I don't know if I just didn't go far enough up or if it hadn't hit yet. And then I go back to my desk, and our friend Jen wrote me, and, you know, not a wrestling fan, but she wrote me and said, I don't know how to break this to you, but I just read that Macho Man died. And I'm like, wait a minute. So then she sent me the link, and then I started flipping through Twitter, and then there it was. Like, and I knew it was legit right away because, and I know our buddy Chris didn't believe it because it was only on TMZ, but the way that all the wrestlers were already, like, you know, giving their thoughts and prayers, like, it seemed like they knew the truth already, and it was already out there. And I mean, everybody was tweeting about him, and actually, we'll talk about this more tomorrow night when we talk about the social media stuff, but I just thought it was pretty amazing how this guy really touched like so many levels of people, not even just fans, just everyone knew him. I mean, he really must be the first mainstream modern era wrestler to pass away, right? That everyone knows. I mean, like, the Chris Benoit thing was major, but not everyone knew Chris Benoit. Same with Eddie Guerrero and Owen Hart. You know, those are, you know, tragically guys who tragically passed away, but not guys that everyone knew. I mean, Mr. Perfect maybe, but Macho Man was really known by everybody. Everybody knew who Macho Man was.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember as going through a lot of the Facebook, I've been on Facebook more than I was on Friday. And I, you know, I go on a little bit every day, but I was all over the place, and somebody had immediately created a Facebook, tribute page. And, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. It was very strange. And I've been at work when I've read about a lot of wrestling deaths. I remember when Bryan Adams died, when Umaga died. I mean, obviously these guys aren't the level of Randy Savage by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm just saying, I was at, like, when you're home or when you're at a friend's house, like, I remember when Eddie Guerrero died, I was at our friend G's house, and you called the house and told us when Eddie died. Owen, obviously millions were watching when Owen Hart died. But I didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm staring at my screen. I'm walking around. I went upstairs. I did some work in our work area. I came back to my desk and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know who to talk to. It was bizarre. I mean, it just was so out of left field. And then a lot of emotions and feelings set in at that point. And the one that hits me, first of all, I got upset, but now I know why they were doing it. But I got upset that it took an hour for WWE to put it on their front page. An hour.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I think they were probably waiting to verify everything, and they don't want to jump the gun. And, you know, sometimes they're in a tough situation, because what if they put it up too early, then everyone's saying they're just trying to sensationalize it maybe and trying to get hits. And I think they were trying to wait for maybe to contact Lanny, because Lanny seemed to be the point man on a lot of this stuff. And he was the first one I saw verifying it on TMZ and on Twitter. So, you know, it was maybe they're waiting to confirm with him and get a statement from him and just kind of get the details that they could post. So I'm okay with them taking that time to make sure that because the last thing they want to do is put up something and then ends up being a hoax, you know?
Yeah, no. And then I realized they probably wanted to make a video piece, which really all they did was they took the open of the DVD and put a slate at the end. So it's not like they did. But I mean, you know, what are you going to do in such a quick notice? I mean, hopefully while we're taping this, they haven't done anything on Raw yet, but I'm sure they've put something. You know,
they I would think they do a video. I know they did the slate, but I'm thinking they must be.
Yeah, they must be doing a video. They did the slate, and they did the slate last night at the Over the Limit pay per view, which we'll talk about later in the week. We won't get into that tonight, but they did put a slate up. But that's different. Pay per view is different because not everybody's watching, so you don't want to waste a nice thing on something nobody's watching. So obviously, it's more suited for Raw. But I just didn't know what to do. I was stunned. I was like, "Where can I go do things?" And people were posting interviews and Matt, you know, my brother's
and everyone though on Facebook is amazing. Like anyone from the 80s. I mean, I've never seen so many Macho Man pictures anywhere.
I know, really. Everybody changed their
profile picture.
Yeah, everybody's profile pictures changed in the span of like my brother, you, me, a couple other guys, Andrew, another kid, Andrew, not Andrew Reich, another Andrew. Posted another guy, my brother. I mean, it was crazy. My brother was talking about the Savage Steamboat match, was one of his favorites, and just all this emotion. And then this, my friend Jen that I went to college with, anytime she sees anything about wrestling, first person she thinks of is me, obviously. And she read the news and she posted on my Facebook, "I just thought of you. Are you okay?" It was like, it's weird because when you're that deep of a wrestling fan, and I've been a fan for close to 30 years now. It's almost like a member of your family dies, and it's just like, you're right, you know, because, you know, everybody loved Macho Man. It didn't matter if he was an asshole or he was a babyface.
Right.
He was Macho Man, you know? He was Mach.
And he was known, you know, also for – I saw a lot of Slim Jim comments. You know, that was kind of one thing he was known for. And then he had some Spider-Man stuff in there from his Spider-Man cameo.
Yep, Bonesaw.
Yeah, so, you know, he definitely was one of those iconic guys from a period when wrestling was big for a lot of kids growing up.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned Slim Jim. I went to the Slim Jim Facebook page. I couldn't go on their regular site from work. But I went to the Slim Jim Facebook page, and they obviously posted something. They did post something on there, which they had to. I mean, they're pretty much their product is pretty much known for because of him. And I actually posted one of my comments was, I think Slim Jim should do a memorial package or wrapper or a box in honor of him and make it a special, you know, like maybe a nice metal tin that you can, you know, buy Slim Jims and keep Slim Jims in or whatever in honor of him. And I had like 15 people, total strangers, 15 people click like on my comment alone. So that made me feel pretty good that, you know, and I think it's the truth. I mean, and it would sell like hotcakes. It would sell.
Yeah. It might be something they definitely look at doing. I would think so. He was such a big pitch man for them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty much synonymous. And, you know, they also got to be a major sponsor with WCW during that time as well when he was there. They sponsored things like Halloween Havoc every year usually. So, you know, he definitely played a big role in the growth of their company. So
I
don't think that's an overstatement at all.
No, not at all. And he used to put the logo on the back of his jacket. And I think they'll do something. I like to think they'll do something. This is just one of those weird. I don't think I felt this way. Probably Eddie was the last one. Because the one thing, this is my personal opinion, and I did open up the next thing I thought of was I wanted, of course, hear from our fans here on The Place to Be. So I went to our Facebook page and I just opened it up, put down to all of our listeners, put down anything you want, your favorite Savage interview, promo piece, match, moment, pay-per-view, you met him. Did you ever meet him at like a house show or at like a autograph signing or anything? It's just one of those things where, you know, he was the kind of guy in the late 80s and early 90s that was always at stuff. He was the face of the company at one point. He was at various events. And like I said, a lot of wrestlers have passed away in the last 6 years. Like I said, Umaga and Brian, and I apologize if I forget anybody, but I'm just thinking Umaga and Brian Adams and obviously Chris Benoit, but that's a different situation. There's been a few others over the last 5 or 6 years since Eddie. Eddie was the last one that I think affected a lot of people on a world.
Sherry is another one.
Sherry passed away. Luna Vachon, a lot of various, and guys that are close to our hearts. Like you and I were very upset when Bigelow died, obviously. But that's personal things. Obviously, I know the one that still, and we've talked about it on this podcast and personally, I know the one that still affects you personally the most is Pillman. But the one thing about this one, and I don't want to get into it tonight. I want us to talk a little bit about his career and read some of the some of our Facebook feedback. We're not going to make this a very long one tonight. We knew we had to be on. We knew we had to go on tonight. So we're not going to do a long one. We got a couple of great podcasts coming up this week. So one of them actually is very Savage influenced, believe it or not, kind of ironic. But the one thing about this that pisses me off more than anything else about this is that he's probably the last guy left, at least the last real fan favorite left, that has no closure. We don't know what happened with him and Vince or him and the company. Yeah, he did those commercials.
I read someone posted a story that Piper said that Savage smacked Vince in a bar. I don't know when it was or where it was or if it's true or not. And that was what led to the issue that he he embarrassed him in front of people. I guess he smacked him in the face. So I mean, I don't know if that's legit or not. There's always that Stephanie rumor out there, which I don't believe.
I don't believe it. I think Savage would be. I don't think Vince would have kicked him out of the company and blacklisted him just for that. I think he'd be in jail if that actually happened.
Yeah, so I mean that, you know, you're right. I mean, it's too bad that to me, outside of the family aspect of it, I'm talking as a fan. The worst part of it is that we won't get to see him do the Hall of Fame speech and be inducted. And now I'm sure he will go in and, you know, I'm sure Lanny will accept for him and give the speech. And, you know, it'll be good because he's very well spoken and I'm sure we'll get some poems. But, it's too bad because that was one guy I was always looking forward to when he finally, you know, he's been rumored for so many years to finally be on his way back. And will he come back? And won't he come back? And why not? You know, he was like a lightning rod for that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
to have him, you know, never be there. And, you know, reading some of these touching tributes too, I don't know if you saw some of the stuff Hogan was saying. Apparently they just spoke a couple of months ago for the first time in 10 years. And, Hogan said he was like really happy because they had a good conversation and he felt that they were going to start to become friends again. And now he was kind of pissed that, you know, this happened and now he's going to lose out that chance that he had to, you know, reconnect with him. So I thought that was good. And actually I just saw someone post on the blog of Doom, Ultimate Warrior posted some videos that were supposed to be really well done and very touching about Savage. You know, that they obviously probably had a very good relationship. And also, I guess DDP posted a series of videos talking about Savage and talking about their feud in 97 and all kinds of personal thoughts that are supposed to be excellent. So, So a lot of interesting stuff there for those people still can't get enough of the tributes about Macho Man.
No, I mean, and you know, it's funny. I'm looking forward to, and I actually watched, I obviously Friday night, I was at work and then I went out and Friday night I came home and I had thrown the Savage DVD in my player a couple weeks ago. And I was actually just about to throw in the Hogan anthology DVDs into my, I usually like to have it to fall asleep. Usually listening to Gorilla helps me sleep. So, and I was going to throw it in and then I realized, no, I put Hogan away and I brought out Savage again and I watched all three discs again. And, I don't know a lot cause I have to admit, I wasn't watching a lot of WCW back then. So I don't totally remember a lot of the Savage DDP feud, but I was talking to our friend John this weekend and he loves that feud.
Yeah, that was an excellent feud. Well, they were two guys who meticulously planned out matches. And so when they got together and really, you know, laid out a great series of matches, they really clicked. And they were main events to WCW pay-per-views at a time when Hogan was champion and the NWO was on top and they were running main events. And, you know, they had that weird thing where Nash kind of broke away and they had Hall and Savage teaming up on a couple of clashes and pay-per-views and, you know, against DDP. So, they, you know, they had a lot of good stuff going on at that period.
Yeah. And here's a guy who made people look like $1 million. I mean, John, our friend John, texted me Saturday, and he's like, I just threw in disc one of the DVD, and I'm watching Savage and Warrior from WrestleMania 7. And I think deep down, and again, we'd love your comments on the Place to Be Facebook page, Blog of Doom, and all of our other, you know, on our message board as well. that might be the template, that entire segment, beginning to end, not just the match, but the whole piece of that match with Warrior from WrestleMania 7 and the whole thing with Elizabeth at the end, might be the perfect example of Randy Savage's career. That piece right there. A, because the guy was a phenomenal wrestler and he made a piece of meat like Warrior look great for a 4.5-star match. And B, how many people truly, other than Hogan at Bash at the Beach 96, and that half doesn't count, but how many people could legitimately go from being an absolute hated bastard 1 minute, and then 35 minutes later, you want to give him a hug?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could do that like him. Nobody.
And as we talked about, he always told such emotional stories and matches. you know, WrestleMania 5, the whole Mega Powers thing. Well, 4 to 5.
Right.
Or even going back to 3 with Steamboat. You know, great storyline. Mega Power storyline, tremendous. You know, WrestleMania 6, feud with Dusty Rhodes wasn't great, but he did the best with what he had to work with. Then, of course, the epic story with The Warrior, epic story with Ric Flair. You know, every year he just had these
Jake.
Long, yep, this Jake feud mixed in there. He just had these long, drawn-out emotional feuds that really sucked you in and you know, just felt real because of the way he sold and made everything seem so realistic and made you feel.
Yeah, he just knew how to... He was the best at describing, he was the best at describing how it felt to be a happy guy or just an absolute bastard. He just knew how to do it right, and it goes back to when he first came in '85. You know, when he was being courted by all the managers, and then he brings out Elizabeth, and ironically, actually, one of my favorite clips. And then we will do a quick little overview of his career, very brief, mm-hmm. just to kind of go through. Because there was a lot of stuff that he did before WWF that not many people know about. I actually have some of his pre-WWF matches. There aren't many of them. One of my favorite segments, and I know you remember it, but throw it in if you haven't watched it in a while. It's on for those that have the Macho Madness DVD. And if you don't have it, get it, period. Even when he was alive, it was worth getting. Now you should definitely get it. On disc 2... there's an extra, and it's when he actually is coronated king
mm-hmm.
after he officially defeated Duggan to become king.
He's and talking like Duggan now. You hate him so
I know,
much.
Yeah, sure. he beats Duggan, becomes the king, and there's a segment on Superstars where it's one of the coolest visuals I think I've ever seen next to the snake standing at attention to Jake after he bit Savage's arm. And that is... all the heels, literally every big-time heel on the WWE roster in 1989 is in the ring, and they're honoring him and the genius, which is ironic, but that it kind of fit, obviously. The genius reads the scroll to officially make him king, and then DiBiase bought him a scepter.
Mm-hmm.
But then the best thing is you just look, and this is just a general thing, and Savage was a huge part of it. He was probably the headlining heel anyway at the time. You just look at the class of heels on the roster back then. I mean, you just look at them all in this one big... mural.
If I remember Savage. Correctly, even the Widowmaker, Barry Windham was in there.
The Widowmaker was in there as well. Savage, DiBiase, Rude, Perfect, the Brainbusters, Greg Valentine, Dino Bravo. I mean, it was probably the greatest collection of bad guys in one ring at the same time ever. Not just for personalities, all awesome wrestlers. I mean, and this was the summertime because the Brainbusters still had the belts. They were the tag champs still. General Demolition hadn't won them back yet, so... But it just all this collection of heels and Savage is at the forefront. It was just the perfect picture of 1989 WWF. It was perfect. And Savage deserved a lot of the credit for that because he was just great. So, mm-hmm. You must get that DVD. You must get it. It's a tremendous collection. 20-something matches, 23, I think. And just all sorts of different matches. Stuff you've never seen before. You know, the WrestleMania 3 match with Steamboat's on there, but there's a house show match with him from late 86 that's unbelievable. Better, than, I think, than the WrestleMania 3 match, believe it or not. Better, I think. It's just a great template for his career. It just kind of sucks that Stryker and Maria are hosting it, but I skip those pieces and go right to the matches. Even that bad... lifeguard match with Ric Flair at Bash at the Beach 95, which is kind of hideous, but even that's kind of a fun little match to watch too. So it's definitely something to get. There's just no doubt about it. You must have it in your collection if you don't. And this is even before he passed away. It was just a great collection to have anyway.
Right. So,
but now it's something you need to have.
Yeah. So let's quickly, like you said, just go through his life and career. born 1952, of course, his father was a wrestler, Angelo Poffo. He played baseball in his younger days, minor leagues for the Cardinals, Reds, and White Sox. Eventually decided he wasn't going to get the break he wanted. So after four minor league seasons, he got into wrestling in 1973. He began in Georgia, actually, and then started working for his father in ICW, which was like the Outlaw Memphis promotion. Right. And apparently that promotion did some crazy crap. They were they had some wild matches and some innovative storylines. And then, of course, he had a great feud with Jerry Lawler once ICW kind of came apart and they joined up with Lawler's Memphis group. And then he turned babyface eventually as well and allied with Lawler. Turned heel again, and Lawler sent him out of Memphis. So, and that's when he joined with WWF in 1985. Debuted in June. He was the first guy to really do the whole thing where he had all the managers competing for him, all begging to, trying to earn her services. And of course, then he introduced Miss Elizabeth, his wife, as his new manager. It was never announced that it was his wife, but in real life it was. Yes. His first pay-per-view debut was on the Wrestling Classic. And then from there, of course, he ended up winning the IC title in February of 86 in that classic match at the Boston Garden where he hit Tito Santana with the foreign object in the head to steal the title. So from there, he got into the feud with George Steele. The feud and the storyline was good, but obviously the matches just were nothing special. But at that point, as we always say, Savage kind of still was doing the Memphis heel, chicken shit heel stuff. He didn't really become, you know, what he would be known for, kind of that badass, nonstop, machine-like heel until around the end of 86, early 87, when his feud began with Ricky Steamboat. Of course, he did the attack on Superstars, busted up his throat with the ring bell. Steamboat was put on the shelf, came back early in 87, and that set the stage for their epic WrestleMania III IC title match, widely regarded as the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, still to this day. So Savage lost the IC title, and over that summer ended up turning face, and that is where we left off with our reviews. So why don't you pick it up from there?
Late 87 again, he became a he was slowly starting to win over fans after that a match with Steamboat. Eventually on the house show circuit, he would start wrestling heels and became a full-fledged babyface by the Survivor Series. By early 88, he wanted his IC title back, now at the hands of the Honky Tonk Man. And then with some he was starting to get some help, though, because he was getting double-teamed. Honky started this little group with him in the Hart Foundation, so he was getting triple-teamed in matches. But then Elizabeth would start going to the back and bringing out the then World Wrestling Federation champion, Hulk Hogan. So Hogan and Savage were developing this little on-screen relationship. We won't get into the details. We got other podcasts for that. But after a Hogan and Andre the Giant match ended in controversy, the world title was vacated. And at WrestleMania IV, in a 16-man tournament, Randy Savage became the World Wrestling Federation champion. He would have a great one-year run, wrestle all sorts of guys, DiBiase, etc. Obviously, the Mega Powers would be him and Hogan would be the team. They would go through the year. Eventually, they would split apart, and they would wrestle each other at WrestleMania 5 for the title, which Hogan would win. Creatively, Savage would kind of take a dip for the next couple years. He would team up with Zeus. He'd get a little kooky. He'd go from crazy maniacal heel to crazy period. He would take Sherry as his manager, Sensational Sherry. He'd still feud with Hogan through 89. By late 89, early 90, Hogan would be siphoned off and obviously start his feud with the Ultimate Warrior. Savage would begin a storyline with Dusty Rhodes, who debuted in mid-89. That would lead to as Justin mentioned, a hysterical, I wouldn't say comical, but just a very entertaining match, which I just watched the other night at WrestleMania 6, as he and Sensational Sherry would take on Dusty Rhodes and Thweet Thaffa in a mixed tag match, which of course is totally carried by Jesse the Body's commentary. It's one of the greatest, it's one of the most hilarious matches of all time. And of course, Elizabeth, who had gone off camera during the Mega Power storyline, would come back in for Dusty, and Savage would lose. He would pretty much spend the rest of 1990 feuding with Dusty, bouncing around and doing some, you know, little of this, little of that. Early 91, he would get involved in a storyline with the then World Wrestling Federation champion, the Ultimate Warrior. He would be refused the title match, which would lead to Savage costing the Warrior the title at the Royal Rumble to Sergeant Slaughter, which would lead to probably one of the most underrated yet most beloved matches in the history of WrestleMania, and that is Savage and Ultimate Warrior in the retirement match at WrestleMania 7 in L.A. Again, the perfect template of the kind of character that Savage was. Mm-hmm. And Savage would lose, go into retirement, but Elizabeth and he would reunite. And then they would get married at SummerSlam 91, match made in heaven, which is perfectly counter to the crappy match made in hell. Mm-hmm. But he was technically retired. But Justin will pick it up from here, how he got unretired.
Yes, it was throughout that time where he was commentating, and Jake the Snake had recently turned heel in July against the Ultimate Warrior. He started teaming up with The Undertaker. After Warrior bolted after SummerSlam, they needed a new person to torment. So at SummerSlam, they interrupted the wedding reception. And of course, there was a snake in the box. Elizabeth opens the box. Snake comes out at her. She freaks out. Undertaker decks Savage, and then Sid comes in for the save. Over the next couple months, Savage spent the next... each and every week on Superstars, they'd give updates where he would be petitioning Jack Tunney to come out of retirement. Tunney kept refusing, saying he was, you know, locked into a contract. Things finally came to a head in Superstars of Wrestling October 21st when Jake was cutting a promo, goading Savage into the ring, basically calling him a chicken shit. Savage finally went in there. Jake beat the shit out of him, tied him to the ropes, and had the Cobra bite his arm. So according to storyline, the Cobra's devenomized, so Savage was okay. And finally, Savage would have the fans, he begged the fans to call it to Tunney and have them rally his reinstatement, and he did just that. Of course, the brouhaha that ensued at Tuesday in Texas, they had like a 5-minute match, which Randy Savage won, and then Jake, him and Jake got into a fight after, of course, and that's when Jake smacked Elizabeth. So there was some great stuff there as well. Some of the best character work for both of those men. Throughout their careers, and that feud was capped off at on February 8th, 1992, Saturday Night's Main Event, which Savage won. So after that, with the Hulk Hogan-Ric Flair WrestleMania match off, they needed a new challenger, so Savage was chosen to challenge Flair for the title at WrestleMania. They began a great feud where Flair declared that Elizabeth was his before she belonged to Savage, and he dubbed a whole bunch of photos that put Flair and Liz together, and it was good stuff, and that led to Savage winning the title at WrestleMania 8. Things would fall apart for him over the summer as he would divorce from Elizabeth in September after losing the title back to Ric Flair there. So I'll let you pick it up from there.
So Savage wins the world title at WrestleMania 8. He wrestles throughout the summer. In fact, a couple of gems he would wrestle that summer. They're both on his DVD. One of them was in Sheffield, England, when he faced a very young and very green Shawn Michaels. A good match to watch. And then there's a match very close to you, kind sir, in Worcester, Massachusetts, a house show tag match, or it might have been a Superstars taping. Bret Hart, the at the time Intercontinental Champion, and the world champion Randy Savage, kind of funny, the two belt holders, taking on Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. On paper, obviously, you really can't get much better than that. Obviously, all different levels of their careers. You know, if it was Shawn last year, obviously, it'd be pretty awesome. But anyway, Savage would wrestle all comers. He would eventually face the Ultimate Warrior at SummerSlam 92 in Wembley Stadium in a babyface versus babyface match. Not a bad match. Savage wins by countout, right? Was it Savage won by countout?
No, Warrior
won by countout because Savage injured his knee.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole storyline. You know, Flair was selling Perfect's services to who the highest bidder. And there was a whole big, you know, was Warrior going to take Perfect? Was Savage going to take Perfect? Of course, the whole thing was a big ruse. And Perfect and Flair took out Savage's knee after the match. A couple days later, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, Randy Savage, banged up knee and all, would end up losing back the World Wrestling Federation title to Ric Flair.
Yep, and then after the match, the newly debuted Razor Ramon came out and beat the shit out of him.
That's
and
right.
And actually, he interfered as well to cost Savage the match.
Yes, and obviously, a month and a half later, Flair would lose to Bret Hart. Actually, it's funny because on a personal note, when I first met our good friend Dr. G, his roommate, who was a big Razor Ramon fan, had one of my favorite PWI headlines. You might have remembered it. It was when that Savage Ramon feud started, and it had a big the big headline was "Quién es más macho?"
Mm-hmm.
With big black letters, and it was a picture of Savage and Razor. It was really cool. So that feud would build, and he would end up facing Flair and Razor Ramon at the Survivor Series. Originally, his tag team partner was the Ultimate Warrior, but that was one of the many times that Warrior flaked out and left. So he was replaced by the now babyface Mr. Perfect, and they wrestled in a tag match at the 92 Survivor Series, which they'd win. Savage would then go to the 93 Survivor Series. He'd be the last man left, but foolishly tried to go off the top rope, one of the few illogical things Savage would do in his career. He went off the top rope and got thrown out by Yokozuna, but he was the last guy left in the match. But Yokozuna, of course, won the Rumble and, of course, go on to win the title. Savage would do a lot of commentating for the rest of the year in 93. He, of course, was the commentary booth with Bobby Heenan and a new Jim Ross at WrestleMania 9. Would pretty much stay in the commentary booth for the rest of 93. He would wrestle here and there. He would obviously start a storyline at the end of 93 with Crush. The whole thing was Crush got beat up. Him and Savage were close friends. Crush got beat up by
Yokozuna,
but Savage was contractually obligated as an announcer to not leave the table.
So right, he had gotten involved in other matches, I think. So that was like Tony was being strict with him.
Yeah, so he could not leave the broadcast table, so we had to sit there and watch Crush get the crap kicked out of him. Crush would come back. They do phone interviews. He would ignore Savage's questions and keep talking to Vince or Gorilla or whoever the pro. And eventually, Crush would come back as a heel, and Mr. Fuji would be his manager. And that would lead to Savage's last pay-per-view match, which would be WrestleMania 10 at Madison Square Garden, where he would win the first official last man standing match, where he would hogtie Crush to some type of, I don't know, some weird kind of scaffolding thing backstage at the Garden, and he would win his last pay-per-view match. He would wrestle a few more times throughout 94. I think he wrestled Yoko a couple times. But by the end of 94, backstage, it was clear that Vince did not want him as a wrestler anymore. He wanted him as a commentator and as a kind of as a personality and an ambassador to the company.
He wanted him to take over the role he saw that Hogan was going to get, which is kind of like the Babe Ruth of wrestling, that he could use to go out and for publicity tours and stuff like that. That's kind of what he wanted Savage to take over after Hogan.
But Savage, and Savage felt he still had a lot left in the tank. So they apparently mutually, Savage's last pay-per-view appearance, he would be the, quote, host of SummerSlam 94 at the United Center in Chicago, similar to what The Rock did this past year at WrestleMania, except not get involved in anything. And he would leave in October, I believe. And actually, in a rare or very rare break of pseudo kayfabe, Vince would announce on Raw that Savage had left and wished him the best and thanked him for the 9 years of service to the company and wished him luck in his future endeavors. We all know where he would go, and Justin will pick it up from there where he would go.
Yes, late in the year in 1994, he debuted with WCW alongside Hulk Hogan, December 3rd. They had a little bit of a tease as to whether he was going to be with Hogan or turn on him, and he ended up associating with Hogan. So him and Hogan would kind of reunite the Mega Powers, and they'd run through WCW all through 95, teaming up through various feuds. At the end of the year, Savage and Flair resumed their feud. That obviously continued over from WWF. Savage would eventually win the U.S. Competed in the U.S. Heavyweight Championship Tournament. Mm-hmm. And just kind of putted around, feuding with Flair, feuding with guys that hated Hogan. They would fight throughout 95. But then he finally would win the WCW World Heavyweight title in late 95 when he won World War III Battle Royal. He lost to Flair at Starrcade, but then won it back on Nitro on January 22nd. Lost it back the next month. And after that, he brought Elizabeth with him in again to counter Woman, who was along with Ric Flair. But then Liz would turn on Savage and go with Flair. So now Savage is back to being alone, just with Hogan. Bash of the Beach 96 came along, of course, and that was when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash challenged any three WCW stars. So Savage is one of them, along with Sting and Luger. Of course, that's when Hulk Hogan turned heel with the NWO beginning. Savage fought Hogan for the title at Halloween Havoc. Hogan spray-painted him, or defeated him, then spray-painted him, humiliated him, and Savage was off TV for the rest of the year. Now, there were a lot of rumors at that point that he was headed back to WWF. They were saying that there was the Mystery Man at Survivor Series 96 on the Vader, in the Vader match. It was the face team, but it was Yoko, Savio,
Snuka?
Well, Snuka was the guy who was the Mystery Man.
Yeah.
I forget who else was in that match. It was a weird team. But yeah. They had a mystery guy in the picture, kind of looked like Savage. And the rumor that he was actually, you know, was negotiating and it maybe was going to be him, but ended up being Snuka. He re-signed with WCW at the end of 96, made his return on January 20th. Him and Sting would kind of hang out together in the rafters, and then at Super Brawl, Savage officially turned heel and joined the NWO. From there, he had a great feud, as we mentioned earlier, with DDP that lasted all throughout 1997. Him and Liz were heels and feuding with Paige and his wife, Kimberly. 98, he had a little feud with Lex Luger, and then in mid-98, he was in the middle of the whole NWO split. He would go with the Wolfpack and feud with Hogan again. Savage actually won the World Heavyweight title once again, defeating Sting, but the next night on Nitro, Hogan beat him, as always, taking back the title. So for the rest of 98, he'd basically just kind of feud on and off until he was injured on June 15th. He had to take a hiatus to recover from two major knee injuries. Mm-hmm. So why don't you pick it up there?
He would only make one more appearance in 98. He helped Flair, ironically, beat Bischoff for the presidency of WCW on the last Nitro of 1998. When he returned, we kind of saw a new Savage. Gone was the crazy hair sticking out and the beard was all disheveled, and he had the crazy coats with the tassels and the cowboy hat. That was all gone. He would come back. His hair would be slicked back in a black ponytail. Mm-hmm. He had earrings. He would wear like tight shirts with black stars on them. He kind of would look like a jacked up pimp.
Right.
And would introduce his brand new 22-year-old girlfriend, Gorgeous George, who was a former porn star.
And he was ridiculously loaded up on steroids at this point.
Yes. Yeah. We all knew it, and he knew it. I mean, he was definitely. Because remember, there was a time where just backtracking, in WWF, where he would be wearing T-shirts mm-hmm. or shirts with his outfits, because that's when they would be kind of, that's during the whole, steroid thing. But by then, WCW didn't care. So he went back to looking ridiculously huge. He guest refereed the main event at Spring Stampede 99. DDP won it. Weird, Savage would interfere in DDP's matches to make sure he kept the world title. But then Nash won it at Slamboree. Savage went after it himself. He would start to then grow this little bit of a stable of hot women, and they'd be Team Madness. There was Medusa, and then there was Miss Madness, and Miss Madness ended up being Molly Holly.
Mm-hmm.
At the Bash 99, Sid came back. He helped Macho Man attack Nash. They would have some matches. They would wrestle at Bash at the Beach in a tag. Savage won his fourth and final WCW World Heavyweight Championship when he pinned Nash. It was also Savage's sixth and final recognized World Championship. And yes, you're quite correct. His reign would last exactly one day, as he would lose the next night on Nitro to all people Hulk Hogan. Wow,
amazing.
What a shock.
Twice. Yeah, twice in 2 years he lost.
Twice
Hogan
in two years
night.
He had a, exactly one day. He had like Kane reigns. And for those of you that were nervous, we won't talk about it, but they are doing a piece on him mm-hmm. on Raw right now. So the WWE did right tonight. Team Madness would start to disband. Every time Savage would lose, Medusa and Molly Holly would start arguing who caused the losses. Savage would fire both of them. And then Savage would start feuding with Dennis Rodman, who, of course, was part of the NWO with Hogan. That was at Road Wild 99. By the end of the summer, his contract was up. He probably felt he was burned out, and he left WCW. He did show up on Thunder in 2000, May 3rd, where he competed in the 41-man Battle Royal. He must have been the 41st. First shot at the title at the Bash, he didn't get it, and he would be gone. We wouldn't see him on camera for quite a number of for 4 years. And why don't you finish off where we see him last?
Yeah, he made his return at TNA's Victory Road, confronting Jeff Jarrett. At the next pay-per-view, we teamed up with Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles to defeat Jarrett, Hall, and Nash. And the next show was supposed to be him challenging Jeff Jarrett for the NWA title. He was going to win and then drop it back eventually, but Savage left over a disagreement on the finish. And also, there's rumor that because Hulk Hogan signed on with TNA at that point to do some promotion, that he wanted no part of it, so he took off. So from there, us wrestling fans never really saw him again until he popped up on the DVD collection that WWF released. Before then, he had kind of just been no mention at all, really, as WWE started to really embrace their history. He was one of the guys they conveniently always left out of things. But then it looked like things were turning around, because this year they released the All-Stars video game, and he was part of it and even did a commercial for it as well.
Yep.
So It looked like things maybe were starting to come along and maybe he'd finally go into the Hall of Fame, but as we know, that did not happen.
No. I mean, he may go in the Hall of Fame, but unfortunately he would not be able, he will not be able to.
Oh, he'll definitely go in now.
Yeah, well, he's definitely in now. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in next year, kind of like they did with Eddie. But obviously he won't be able to represent himself, which is unfortunate. The guy touched everybody in wrestling. And I didn't realize this till our friend Dr. G told me, and I was reading his thing, that the name Randy Savage, obviously his name is Poffo. I find it funny his middle name's Mario. He just doesn't look like a Mario. I find that funny. But he got his name Randy Savage from Ole Anderson. I never knew that.
Hmm.
Pretty funny.
That's good for something, I guess.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm sure he tells that story thousands of times. I'm sure he'll be telling it at the NWA Legends Convention. We'll have to ask our man Graham Cawthon if he tells a story about it this summer. I'm going to miss him. I know he wasn't around, but the lack of closure just irritates me. It kills me. It's like if Brett passed away 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we never saw him again, and there was never that. And every time you saw, like, you would see Shawn Michaels on camera, you'd be like, I feel the same way now with, like, anytime I see Hogan. It's right. Good to know that they talked, but just to know that him and Vince didn't fix whatever the hell needed fixing. And it sucks. It just sucks. And the whole weekend was just, you know, it was just so upsetting. And, you know, I had people texting me, you know, saying they're watching matches. And it really touched people. It's amazing, Justin. And we talked about it earlier about just he was so – everybody knew him. Everybody knew Macho. Everybody knew him. Didn't matter if you were even a wrestling fan, whether it was the Slim Jim commercials or whatever. Everybody knew who he was. And the first person, ironically – One of the first people I thought of after he passed away was our friend Jim,
mm-hmm.
because Jim was a Savage disciple. And I actually went on his Facebook page and I asked him, are you okay? You all right? Everything okay? Because I was upset. I couldn't imagine how he was.
Yeah, doing. I broke the news to him as well. And I think he was in shock when I first told him.
Yeah. I mean, our friend Jim is there's three guys that he is an absolute bona fide fan of. And that is Savage, Sean, and Taker. And Savage was his guy. Mm-hmm. So it's devastating. My brother was devastated because he was always a big Savage guy, particularly when he was a heel. He just loved his matches. It sucks. It's like a piece. As you get older, you always feel like a piece of your childhood is leaving you. And it's just, it sucks. And as we get older, people are going to get older, you know, and I don't even want to fathom what's going to happen when, like, Hogan dies sometime. I don't know when. Obviously, he will. Who knows when? Hopefully not for a while.
You know what, though? I think this is worse because we haven't gotten to see, like, I mean, obviously, it'll be tough when he does. But, I mean, we've had Hogan overload for the last however many years.
Well, that's,
you
know, that
he's
is true
on all the time. We see him all the time. He's part of our wrestling lives still. Savage is someone who really, really has been gone from our consciousness since, you know, 2000. So, you know, for it to have him just gone and never really get to see him have one last run that all these guys seem to have, even just to come out like Brett does now and just, you know, play a little role here or there, it's something he would have been good at. And, you know, I think he could have even contributed in the ring in 2001 and 2002 in WWE, maybe as part of the Invasion or something like that. I thought he really could have had one last run to bring closure there, but he just never did. He just, that was it. He's gone.
Mm. Yep. And, you know, he's part of so many different historical notes. It is ironic. We were just goofing about it during his biography in WCW. But think about it. Every single one of his world title reigns ended with losses to either Hogan or Flair.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. You know, if you're going to lose, you're going to lose to the best. So, you know, can't argue with that. And there's a guy who, you know, obviously Hogan and Flair are the two cornerstones of the business over the last, you know, 40, you know, 35 years. He's probably the only guy that had legitimately solid feuds with both of them. And in terms of a stretch of matches and just great promos and great skits, no one had the equal number of interaction with two of the greatest of all time, Hogan and Flair, like Savage did. They'll forever be linked. And again, get the DVD, watch stuff on YouTube. And in a moment, we're gonna read some of our feedback on our message board. Just the outpouring of emotion and sadness, and it sucks. I just keep saying it. It's, you know, you can't really sugarcoat it. It sucks because, like you said, we missed him. We were hoping every year we were this close. We felt we were this close, and then it never happened. It's wrong. It's unfortunate. But we'll always have the memories. We'll always have our DVDs, 24/7 online. We'll always have a piece of him around us. And again, even more ironic, the last person that I will ever see wearing a Macho Man t-shirt is you.
That is correct. Yes. So at least we get to pay tribute to him with a championship beer pong team.
That is exactly it. That is exactly true. So, I don't know if you had anything else. We can pop out the feedback and
see. Yeah, I'll start reading through that. And then I think that's pretty much all that needs to be said has been said. So
yes.
Here's some of the feedback. Of course, you asked to post favorite moments, matches, interviews, or whatever comes to mind. William Aaron Kenny says the cream of the crop promo, which actually we do have queued up to bring us out.
Yes.
Jeremy Nichols, my favorite Savage moment at this Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view when Jake Roberts is walking to the ring. Savage doesn't give him a chance to get in the ring before jumping and beating the shit out of him in the aisle. Easily one of the best programs Savage was in. My favorite Savage match, WrestleMania 5 against Hogan. Even with his arm hurt, Savage had his working boots on and brought out the best in Hogan.
Yes, he did.
I know people don't take the WWE's Hall of Fame seriously, but it's a damn shame he wasn't put in while he was still alive. I'm certain he'll be in it next year. Or at some point, it would just have been nice to see Macho in the company, even if it was a one-shot deal. I think he deserved it, regardless of the Stephanie rumor, which, of course, we don't believe.
No, we don't believe. And it was great. Somebody actually, as Bret Hart's coming to the ring for the main event on Raw tonight, somebody is holding a sign that says Bonesaw. I was hoping to see at least one, so it was pretty good.
Bob Colling, I watched a Savage Hart match in Japan during a house show tour in May 1994. A great bout, along with countless others. Mm-hmm. Your buddy, Kieran Polland.
The Hot Scott.
One of my favorite Macho Man matches is his match with Ric Flair at WrestleMania 8. Great storytelling, and Macho gets his moment. Jason Greenhouse, WrestleMania 7 versus The Warrior, as well as the post-match reuniting celebration with Liz, his feud with Jake Roberts, jumping off the top rope with the ring bell at the Steamboat, and of course, WrestleMania 3. Rob Houston, Bonesaw McGraw from Spider-Man, oh yeah, dig it. Do you think this gets him in the Hall of Fame next year automatically? And Karen answers that he pretty much has to. I know WWE doesn't like to put too many big stars at once, but if they still want Rock to be inducted, then him and Savage can go in as co-headliners. And Corey Ferreira says he's going into the Hall of Fame next year for sure. They need to do him and Elizabeth in the same year. My favorite Savage match is the same as most people, that being Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. Predictable, but great.
And I think he'll go in next year. I don't think they're going to wait. They didn't wait for Eddie.
Do you think they'll put Liz in?
Oh, sure. I think they'll put him in. Yeah, I think they'll put him in together. They might as well. They'll forever be wrestling's first couple.
Even with all the stuff that surrounded her death and everything, do you think they'll still?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know what? If Luger's an employee of the company, then why not?
Right.
You know, if they've forgiven him, then nah. It's people. You know what the thing is, Justin, with a situation like her, the fans don't care.
Well, I know that they might just maybe don't want to bring that up. You know, they can do it without it. But
yeah, nah, it's, you know, they could say she had her issues and, you know, whatever. But I think if they're going to put him in, there's no doubt they got to put her in. There's just no question. She was the first. She was truly the first lady of the WWF. She was, no doubt. No doubt about it. She definitely will go in. Yeah, with him.
All right. So before we go, why don't you quickly tell us your one, it may be out of the box, Savage moment. I mean, obviously we know the 3, the 7 and stuff like that.
Right. Well, there's a guy on Facebook. There was a DVD that came out last year, and I've told you about it. It came out here locally in Connecticut. It was called The Last Days of the Coliseum, and it was a documentary about my home arena. Like, your home arena is the PCC, a.k.a. the Dunk. Mine was the New Haven Coliseum. It was 10 minutes from my house. I counted them on our good man, Graham Koff, on site. I counted 35 house shows I went to at the Coliseum between 1987 and 1993, and I've watched Savage at 29 of them. And I did see him walk out of the Coliseum. I did see him walk out of the Coliseum one Saturday afternoon after a matinee. It was 1990. He was a heel. It was a tag match. It was him and Rude. It was right before WrestleMania, right before SummerSlam 90. It was a weird tag. It was him and Rude against, I think it was Warrior and Dusty. Something like that. It was a very weird, weird tag match.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to high five him. And my brother had his T-shirt on, not the purple one, another one that they were selling in concession. So he liked the shirt, and I got to high five him. So that was pretty cool. That was my one actual chance to actually touch Macho Man. But I've seen countless matches of his, and all the house shows I've ever been to. My favorite match of his is still WrestleMania 3, and probably always will be. But I am going to look forward to really digging into the 97 DDP feud, because I don't really remember that very much. So I'm looking forward to those matches. There were 3 matches they had that year. They had one at the Bash. They had one at Spring Stampede.
Halloween Havoc.
And Halloween Havoc. They had, what was it, the Las Vegas Death Match or some weird title. And I'm actually glad that my DirecTV just dumped in the middle of the main event and not during the Savage piece. So yes. I'm glad about that. That's my moment. I know you have a couple because you and I, in the time we've known each other, have seen a lot of your things in your youth. And I know you have a special, your little costume moment. Actually, it was Jim's. But what are your special? I know he was always one of your favorites on your lists. So what are your special?
Oh, this is so awesome. CM Punk is wearing Savage's old tights and boots.
Oh, and of course I can't see it because my satellite's out.
He's got the pink tights with the white stars and the yellow boots.
Oh, tremendous. Yeah. Oh, that's the WrestleMania 3 tights.
Yep,
and
he's
boots.
Got them on. I was wondering why he had pants on before. So that makes sense. He was hiding it.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
To me, I just remember that, there were two guys that really the Providence Civic Center always loved. And it was Bret Hart and Randy Savage. Those are the two guys that no matter what score was, who was heel, who was face, who was in WCW, who was in WWF, those two guys, they were really the two guys that this pretty fairly big wrestling hotbed throughout the 80s and 90s were always a fan of. And I always loved seeing Savage come here. He was always on the card, and just seeing the reaction he would always get always just made me smile, because he really was one of my favorites. And of course, there was also, this is probably not his best moment, but I always just kind of remembered it fondly. In 1998, Jim and I went to a Nitro, and it was right before, I'm trying to remember, it was like Great American Bash 98. It was during that whole weird feud where Hogan and Bret were feuding with Savage and Piper, and they had a tag match there. And it was just cool to see two of the all-time Providence favorites, Savage and Bret, in the ring. In their later years, still kind of going at it and still getting a great reaction. So it was just kind of one of those cool little moments to bring it full circle for those guys. Mm. And I also, there was this random public access wrestling show, and it was these two guys, Wolverine, and I forget the other guy's name. They were basically local indie guys. Mm-hmm. And they had this show where they would just go around the city, and they'd show up at different events and different parties and whatever, different functions, basically, and just kind of do on-the-spot interviews, almost like a Comedy Central kind of thing, but only on a public access level. And the same special must have ran every like Saturday night for like 3 years, it seemed like, in the late 90s. And one of them was they interviewed Savage at one of the Gravity Games in Providence. It was kind of like the precursor to the X Games, or it might have even been when the X Games had already started. And they're interviewing him, and it's one of the greatest whacked out promos of all time. He's like, I feel like I've been here before, but I know that I haven't. And they're like, well, actually, you wrestled right there, hundreds of times at the Providence Civic Center. He's like standing in front of it. He's like, all right. it was just hilarious. It's like, this guy, does he really not remember being here all these years? In a town that loved him. And he, of course, he did his usual, riding the edge of a lightning bolt kind of stuff. And just seeing the looks on those guys' faces, they interviewed him, him acting like he had never been there. And it was just great stuff. So those are kind of the hidden Savage moments I always like to smile about.
And then, of course, there was the costume contest that you guys had, what was that, 94, and Jim dressed like Savage. I'm trying to remember who you dressed as.
Well, I think it was either late 93 or early 94. They, Kix 106, it's now Hot 106, here in Providence, did a contest where you'd go down, I think it was Shaw's we went down to, and you had to dress up, and the best costume was going to win tickets. And unfortunately, five of us showed up. It was me, my sister, Jim, and then two other random people, and three of them dressed as Savage. But they're all different Savages. Jim was like, he was like 91-ish Savage. And then there was another guy there who was like 94 All-American USA Savage. He had like the red, white, and blue on. And then there was a vintage Savage from like 87.
Oh, beautiful.
That basically had like the bandana and the robe. And then I went as the Big Boss Man, and my sister went as IRS. She looked tremendous as IRS. she had kind of moderately long hair, so she had it slicked back, and she wore my dad's white shirt and suspenders, and she carried around a briefcase. But since only five of us showed up, they gave us all tickets. So all of a sudden, me, Jim, my sister, we had now had 12 tickets. So we ended up all going to a house show. We had like 12 people with us, and it was a cool, pretty cool moment. So
nice. We thank those, on the place to be, a message board or on our Facebook page for your moments. We're going to try and probably wrap up this podcast quickly, because there's a monsoon coming here through Southern Connecticut, and I don't want the power to go out and we get knocked off the air, but. And that's why my signal is shot. So, so just letting you know, my friend, probably in about probably 6 or 7 hours, you're probably to get deluged with a monsoon. So just to let you know. God bless you, Macho Man. You are one of our favorites. You will never be forgotten. in the pantheon of wrestling fans all across the world. You know, you are. The question was in that PWI in 1992, Quienes Mas Macho. It is certainly you, my friend. Rest in peace.
WrestleMania 3 at the Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. It's a day that I'm certain my guest at this time will not forget. I'm talking about the former Intercontinental Champion of the World, Macho Man
nothing
Randy
Savage. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing means nothing.
Nothing means nothing. What do you mean by that?
More. I'm talking about all the way to the top, yeah. Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in. But the cream will rise to the top, oh yeah. Macho Madness, yeah, has got more to offer than President Jack Tunney thinks that I got. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something right now. Cards stacked against the Macho Man Randy Savage in WrestleMania 3. Yeah, let me see it, yeah. Let me see it. Out loud, and let me point to the president of the World Wrestling Federation. The Macho Man Randy Savage is not happy with your decision. Yeah, I am the cream in the World Wrestling Federation.
Wait a minute.
And there is no doubt about it. Yeah, you mean Gene Okerlund? You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Wait a minute, though, Randy. I've got to ask you very seriously. Do you blame Mr. Jack Tunney, the distinguished president of the World Wrestling Federation, for Ricky Steamboat being the Intercontinental Champion today?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Outside interference, yeah. In my moment of glory. Yeah, no, I'm living in a nightmare. And I am the cream. And now, not only the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt must fall, but the World Heavyweight Championship belt. Because Hulk Hogan, yeah, I am the cream. Yeah, the cream of the crop. And there is no one that does it better than the Macho Man Randy Savage. On balance, off balance, doesn't matter. I'm better than you are, yeah. And I'm talking to everyone in the World Wrestling Federation. And I'm even talking to President Jack Tunney, yeah. I'm on my way. And nothing is gonna stop me. Nothing's gonna stop me.
You know, just out of curiosity, Randy, and I certainly don't want to diminish your tremendous God-given talents, but I'm very curious. I haven't seen Elizabeth lately.
Yeah, she's on the outside of the ring. Does she interfere in matches? Yeah, nothing, zero. Yeah, pure athlete. Yeah, and I've been maligned from the top to the bottom, and because they can't handle the Macho Man Randy Savage, the cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.